You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Many business leaders anticipate that artificial intelligence and other technological advancements will keep becoming bigger parts of our jobs and our workplaces. A recent survey from IBM found that executives are starting to prioritize people skills in the workplace over technical proficiency, thinking that technology is going to handle more of the duties that require technical skills. Things like flexibility, time management, teamwork, and effective communication are getting more valuable, supposedly at least, while more specific computer and software skills could become less important. It's creating a bigger emphasis on what are often called soft skills that aren't directly taught in schools all the time, but we learn along the way. Our next guest researches this type of skill development and says we need to stop thinking of soft and hard skills as separate things and blend them together instead. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Where did you learn personal and interpersonal skills like time management, working together as a team, things like that? Was it in school, on a particular job, from a role model? Should we put more emphasis on teaching them in schools, in higher education, in training at workplaces? How valuable are they to you in your workplace? If you hire people in any capacity, do you value these skills? Do you have a hard time finding them? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Matthew Hora is an associate professor of adult and higher education and education policy studies at UW-Madison. He was previously the founding director of the Center for Research on College Workforce Transitions at UW-Madison. Matthew, thanks a lot for joining us today.
All right. Thanks for having me.
How do we define these types of skills that we're talking about? First of all, what do we usually mean when we talk about these non-technical or interpersonal or, and you don't like the phrase, we'll get into that in a minute, the soft skills?
Yeah, so soft skills typically refer to a category of human aptitude or ability that has to do with acting and thinking and just being in the world. Like you mentioned, they commonly are referring to things like communication or teamwork or critical thinking. And some other ways they're often talked about is they're generic, so they're not linked to any specific discipline like history or chemistry. And they're decontextualized, so they're not linked to any specific workplace or national borders. These are set as opposite to hard skills, which are typically the content, so knowledge of welding, knowledge of chemistry. Sometimes they refer to manual dexterity, like can you, use a surgeon's knife? But this hard and soft skill dichotomy has been with us for a long time.
And you don't like that. You don't like that split, as I understand it. You've written about this. Tell us, there are a variety of reasons. Why don't you like this concept of soft skills, first of all?
So one of the longstanding critiques of the term soft is that it implies that these skills, let's say critical thinking, for example, it's easy to teach and learn. It's kind of mushy. The skills have often been gendered too, where they're effeminate as opposed to the hard skills that are more masculine. I buy those critiques. I think they're valid, but I don't think that they're real important critiques to consider. The bigger critique is that this binary of hard and soft really is an inaccurate way to think about how humans actually enact skills in the performance of tasks. And ironically, this is a conclusion that the people that invented the term soft skills realized back in 1972. There was a U.S. Army Behavioral Science Research and Development Unit. They were charged with coming up with a new categorization system for job tasks in the armed forces. They were supposed to do some performance evaluation and training. And so they came up with the system. Soft skills had to do with people and paper, and it had to do with tasks that were performed in these changeable and non-standardized contexts, like motivating troops in the field. Those were set in contrast to hard skills, which involved machines, and that had fixed context and routines for action, like changing oil in a Jeep. But after they surveyed all these supervisors back in 1972, they realized that most tasks were people and paper oriented or a combination of those and machines. They were performed in non-standardized contexts, and they had few fixed routines or rules for performance. So they decided, let's get rid of this hard and soft binary. Let's get rid of the term soft skills because it's just leading to misunderstanding. And they started to think about, we need to really teach and train people how to use their knowledge to perform tasks in uncertain settings. And they develop these wonderfully sophisticated training and teaching routines and curriculum back in the 70s that unfortunately didn't permeate the US educational system, because we're still talking about soft and hard skills as if they're opposites.
So did those that change in the US Army work? Did it improve outcomes that they were hoping for?
That is where my knowledge of education and training in the armed forces is very limited. But it was really a joy for, academics like me. We kind of geek out when we find old reports and papers. And so I was reading the appendix of the 72 report, and they talk about this type of training they developed that involved role play and demonstration. So they wanted to teach leadership skills, for example. So they would bring in experienced military leaders who would demonstrate to junior officers how to do it. And then they would have the students practice that in different contexts and situations. That's exactly what really sophisticated skills education is looking like right now. Some of the best that I see is in medical education, where they've realized, for example, in oncology, that some clinicians are not very good at breaking bad news. And so a lot of medical education programs now include role play and demonstrations and simulations about how to break bad news to different types of people. And in those contexts, they're marrying their content knowledge with communication, empathy, and on-the-fly problem solving. So it's all fused into one kind of whole about how to enact our knowledge in the real world.
Matthew Hora is with us, Associate Professor of Adult and Higher Education and Education Policy Studies at UW-Madison, talking about how to learn job skills, distinctions between so-called hard skills, the specific tasks of a job, and so-called, though he doesn't like the phrase and many people don't now, soft skills, the communication, the teamwork, things like that, and how to train people in both and where we could do that. You could join in at 800-642-1234, maybe with your experiences. How did you learn how to work as a part of a team, say, or how to communicate with others on the job? Join in at 800-642-1234. Matthew, I want to get to another concern you mentioned earlier, the idea that, okay, so maybe a college is saying, we're going to prepare students for the workforce. We're going to do some kind of program training them on communication skills. And that's going to work whatever job they go into. What I think I hear you saying is, well, hold on. Communication as part of a medical team might be one thing. From an engineer to non-engineers might be another. Customer service staff, still another thing. How important is it to connect those communication type skills to the specific context?
I think it's immensely important. One of the things that we have to realize is some of these skills, take communication, for example. They don't mean the same thing to the same people in the same context. And so recognizing that they're shaped by culture and social class and racial identity and gender is the first thing to recognize. And that impacts, I think, how we think about teaching and training them. The other is that research is pretty clear that while there's some, they call it domain general attributes of these skills, such as communication, that they're best learned and taught when it's domain specific, so that you're talking about communication in a healthcare setting or on an oil rig. Those are two actually places that we've studied. How do employers define and value communication skills in the oil and gas industry relative to healthcare? And they're really different. And so the way they're taught to students in those fields needs to recognize how they're context specific and then teach them accordingly.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. John is with us in Cross Plains. John, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was wondering what the guests would think of neurodivergent folks or folks that tend to lean that direction. I know I, with my ADHD, sometimes feel like my soft skill of time management is hindered. And at other times, it feels like it works. Similar with a bunch of other soft skills. Some I seem like I shine at. Some seem like they are intermittently good. I guess, where does he think is there a place for folks with challenged brains in these kinds of skills?
John, thanks for the call. Matthew, do you have any thoughts for John?
Oh, I do. And that's a wonderful question. You're speaking with somebody who's had a few concussions and has some own unique brain functions myself. And I think this is a perfect example of how we need to not look at these skills in a kind of generic normative fashion. Again, take communication, for example. I see too many workshops that are kind of offered outside of courses about how to be a good professional communicator, right? Maintain eye contact, speak clearly, certain norms about body language. And those, again, first of all, they don't apply the same in all workplaces and in all countries, but they really don't recognize how each of us is different. And we may have different abilities and norms for communicating, and that in most cases, they're okay. They're acceptable. They should be considered normal for that person. And this is also about kind of, you know, the norms that we have and expectations we have for these skills from the employer side needs to be equally flexible, needs to recognize that, okay, this person may be coming from this national background where they don't maintain eye contact. That's not a culturally acceptable thing to do. And they need to recognize that that may be okay. Now, in some cases, it may not be. There may be meetings or, you know, other situations where eye contact is essential. And so you could teach that person, but just recognizing that we're all not conforming to the same normative stereotypes is really important.
John, thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to UW-Madison education professor Matthew Hora about how we teach and learn what are sometimes called soft skills, time management, managing relationships in the workplace, working on teams. You could join in at 800-642-1234. How, when, where did you learn those kind of things? Do you think there are better ways to teach them? Is it the responsibility of employers to bring people on board and train them in these skills, or the education system? If so, where? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We continue our talk with Matthew Hora, Associate Professor of Adult and Higher Education and Education Policy Studies at UW-Madison. He's with us today to talk about how we develop non-technical skills for the workplace, things like communication, organization, teamwork, often referred to as soft skills. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What questions you have about how we teach and learn those skills? Where did you learn them for yourself? If you employ people, you have trouble finding people with those skills? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Matthew, I want to focus on higher education here. Say a college wants to graduate students with these skills. Some students go to college knowing, hey, I'm going to go into a healthcare field, or I'm going to go into engineering, or what have you. Many don't. They're going to get the degree and then figure out the career afterwards. Since they don't have that workplace context in mind, are there meaningful ways to help develop those skills for those students?
Yes, and there's, I think, a couple of things to think about. One is that many people will not only change jobs throughout their lives or careers, but they go into fields outside of college in occupations that don't align with their major. For example, in some of the field work we've done in Wisconsin, we interviewed a number of employees who had arts and humanities backgrounds working in advanced manufacturing. And one of the reasons that they were hired was because of their flexible thinking and creative reasoning. This is what their supervisors told us. And I think that's an example where in some disciplines, teaching reasoning, creativity, critical thinking is kind of baked into the discipline, you know, art history or philosophy, for example. And if those are taught well, which they can be taught well and they can be taught less well, but if they're taught well, that should be a habit of mind or a way of thinking that the student can take into a whole bunch of different careers and occupations throughout their lives.
Do we know how to teach those things well, consistently?
Yes, I will say we do. There's a lot of great educators out there. You know, we've studied a lot of these things, how to teach teamwork or group work, for example. It's a really rich and robust literature about how to do it across the disciplines. There's entire fields of oral communication education. And so we know how to do these things. One of the problems is that most higher education faculty are not taught how to teach at all. much less how to teach these skills. And so oftentimes I think we assume that these skills are acquired by students by osmosis just because they go to college or sit in our classrooms, but that's not the case. We have to take a far more deliberate approach to cultivating these competencies within our fields.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Pat is with us now in Green Bay. Pat, hi, what did you want to bring up?
Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my phone call. I was telling the person that answered the phone, these skills aren't something that a teacher needs to teach. These are skills that we're taught as we're growing up from our parents and our aunts and uncles, our family. We're taught how to communicate. We're taught how to, you know, work with other people. I just find it so hard to believe that this is something a teacher should be teaching. No, this is common sense, everyday stuff.
Pat, thanks a lot for the call. Matthew, do we need schools at whatever level, higher education or primary, to be doing this stuff?
Oh, I really enjoy that question, Pat. Thank you. So in our research in Wisconsin, the top skill that we heard employers say they wanted to see was work ethic, right? And so this is a classic skill, or some people consider it a personality trait, that most people would agree formal education should not be teaching. That's something that's a responsibility of the family, the religious community, and so forth. For myself, I learned work ethic as a 4-H kid, raising sheep for 5 years. And so there's things that we acquire, like you say, through our childhood, through our families, and so forth. And a lot of people view that as the responsible party for developing these skills. I will say, though, that at a certain point, there are more highly developed or professional modes of, say, problem solving, troubleshooting, critical thinking that you could only get in a formal education setting. Now, it doesn't need to be a college degree. It could be an apprenticeship. But there are some more advanced ways of enacting some of these competencies. Again, technical writing is something that we'll learn in grade school. But if you want to be a professional writer, you most likely are going to need some more advanced training. So it's a combination of socialization and enculturation, and then some more formal training on top of that.
Pat, thanks a lot for the call. Barry joins us now in Coon Valley. Barry, hello.
Hello, and thanks for taking my call. I think what the professor is talking about is an absolute essential component of a successful culture, society, workforce, et cetera. And I had 35 employees at one time, and obviously I know how important the social skills, confidence, collaboration, et cetera, are. But at the same time, we are hearing consistently that we have significant issues in K-12 school districts with social emotional skills, behavior issues, et cetera. And I would just like to introduce the concept to whoever's listening out there that if we're going to have healthy people that the professor alludes to, that can learn the higher level skills, we need to put 2 adults in every classroom from kindergarten through 4th grade. And that's about all I have to say.
Barry, thanks a lot for the call. Matthew, Barry wants us to start a lot earlier than, say, college.
There's a lot of research showing that these skills, if developed in pre-K, kindergarten, they last a lifetime. And they have impacts not just on increased wages, but things like, not engaging in criminal activity, health outcomes, and so forth. And so I think the earlier we can start, the better. At the same time, though, that does raise questions about the relative role of the family, the culture, the community, and formal education. The one thing I'd like to point out, though, is especially paying attention to the mental health of young children who went through the pandemic and in many cases are struggling, and we're going to see the effects of that for many years. That has to be part of the conversation of these skills, because communication, teamwork, all these things are deeply implicated in how we feel about ourselves and our state of well-being.
Thanks for that call. Matthew, just in our last minute or so, you mentioned your 4-H background as being really valuable in developing these skills. Just take a minute to tell us how that or maybe comparable programs could help not just you, but other people.
Well, if I was the emperor of the world, I would have every kid be in 4-H because I love it. One of the things I will say that in our interviews in Wisconsin with employers is we heard over and over again, not just the work ethic, but that they would hire on the spot somebody that grew up on a dairy farm. And when we pushed on that, we got, they're hard workers. They work overtime for free, things like that. But the most important thing was the ability to problem solve in really unpredictable situations. And so I think that there's things about, agriculture and working with your hands and dealing with uncertain situations, it's really important. That could be translated into formal education through experiential education, whether it's internships, apprenticeships, hands-on learning projects. There's ways to do it, and we know how to do it.
Matthew, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us today.
All right. Thank you.
That's Matthew Hora, Associate Professor of Adult and Higher Education and Education Policy Studies at UW-Madison. He was with us today to explore how we teach and learn the non-technical skills of workplaces like teamwork, time management, and problem solving and critical thinking. Still time for you to weigh in with your thoughts, maybe your experiences, where you learn these things. If you're an employer, what you're looking for in employees when it comes to those kind of skills, you can email ideas@wpr.org.